So I'll go ahead and get started. My name's Barry Davis. She asked a little bit about kind of what my background is. I've been a mediator full-time for 16 years, specializing in divorce for most of that. So my professional goal is to help people play nice and not screw up their kids, to put it as frankly as I can. And you'll learn in the next hour, I'm pretty direct. I like to call things like I see them, because I've found that being direct is one of the things that we need to do. Being direct and straightforward in a constructive manner is one of the best things you can do in conflict. So that's just a little bit about my background. What we're going to do today, I want this to be as interactive as possible. Number one, I hate lecturing. Number two, this is not a lecture-based topic. This is about taking this information and making it real in your situation. So please bring up as many questions as you like. Bring up individual circumstances. If they're too individual to just maybe just one person, I will say, hey, let's talk about that after class, that kind of thing. But so many of what one of you will bring up applies to other people, maybe everybody else in the room. So we're going to keep it as interactive as possible, because I think if you just sit here for an hour and let me lecture at you, you're not going to get the kind of information and the kind of real-world application that you would if we talk about it. Were you? Okay, good, good. Who won?
I did.
Okay, yep, okay. So you went with the Eugene Cho method of conflict management, which I thought was, were most of you in the talk this morning? Yeah, he talked about his wife going, I have studied the DSM, and there is nothing in there that says the wife is always right. So Eugene's being gracious and deferring to his wife in that situation. So, and that is one conflict management style. Conceding is a conflict management style. What we're going to talk about a little bit later, I'm getting way ahead, but there's five conflict management styles. And the whole key with them is don't go to the same one every time, because it doesn't work, okay? Accommodating, which is the formal term for conceding. If you do that over and over and over again, do you think that's going to work long term? No. There's going to be some resentment. There's going to be some things that start boiling up. There's going to be, and if not, then unfortunately, those are the kind of people that end up in my office because they didn't work through their conflict, and then somebody just says, I'm out, okay? So I think of it as a tool belt. And sometimes you accommodate. Sometimes you compete, meaning, okay, we need to figure out what we're going to do here. Sometimes you go through very difficult, long-term discussions in order to really try to build consensus. So we're going to get to that later on. But like I said, keep this as interactive as possible. Welcome. Grab a handout. What I'm going to try to do, let me just kind of give you a 30,000-foot perspective. On the first page, we're going to talk briefly about what is conflict, okay? And then the second half of the page, we're going to talk about what causes conflict. So there's a subtle but important distinction between those two. And then the third page, we're going to talk about, or the backside, excuse me, the backside or the first page is good. I like this. There's a challenge, okay? We've got a distraction. Keeps me on my toes. We've got all sorts of techniques and better understanding. So I'm going to go a little bit. You've got two pages there, both two-sided. The first page, both sides, is really the subject matter. That's what we're going to be going through. That's the outline. The third and fourth page, the second page on both sides, is a conflict management inventory that we're going to do either towards the end of today or beginning of tomorrow. So if you don't come back tomorrow, you can take that and fill it out. It's pretty easy. Takes you about 5 minutes to fill it out. But the first page, both sides, is what we're actually going to talk about as far as our outline. So I am going to switch it back and forth a little bit from the first page to the second page, because I don't want to just spend the entire time today talking about more theoretical, what is conflict, what's behind it. We're going to talk also about what can you do with it, because I think that would make today a little bit more boring and today a lot more, or tomorrow a lot more exciting as far as the actual techniques. So let's just start with one of the basics. You see the top there. Conflict is an expressed struggle between at least two interdependent parties who perceive incompatible goals, scarce resources, and interference from others in achieving their goals. So that's very academic, okay? But I do think there's some important things there. Expressed struggle, I actually think that you could add to that. Does it need to be expressed, or could it go kind of unexpressed and still be there? I'm seeing some nodding. Absolutely. Okay, expressed conflict is what we think of mostly, but conflict that's, you know, kind of not expressed or about to bubble up, that's still conflict. We're going to talk about that a little bit. Okay? Interdependent parties. So this is an interesting part of it. We could look at this define it very narrowly. Interdependent parties being spouses, maybe coworkers, children, that kind of thing. I think, as both Ryan and Eugene have pointed out, I would define that a lot more globally. Okay? We're all independent on each other at this point. Okay? If one group uses too many resources, that's less for another group. If one group wants to handle things a certain way, another group wants to handle another way. So I think in our more and more interconnected world, the definition of who we're interdependent with is growing all the time. Does that make sense? Okay, so I would define that a little more globally. Perceive incompatible goals, scarce resources, and interference. So if you look at the key components of conflict, I made it pretty easy. Everything that's bolded are the answers for the lines there. So the first one is express conflict. And one thing I want to point out there, the style of communication often creates or maintains a conflict. Now let's talk about our spouses for a second. Have you ever noticed how you approach a certain topic totally dictates where that topic goes? If you approach it softly, and I have a concern about this, this has been bothering me, I'd like to see how we can talk about it, versus I cannot believe that you did this for the 15th time. It's going to totally dictate where things go from there. So I just try to, and I should have said this in my intro, I'm type A assertive male, okay? I had to learn all this stuff for myself, okay? I grew up with a father from the Midwest, an engineer, you know, and so that's a confession as well as just kind of giving some context. A lot of this is about what I call increasing your filter. And the filter is the filter in between stimulus and response, okay? What that other person said and what comes out of your mouth. And if you can just even increase that filter to 5-10 seconds, before whatever was going to come out of your mouth originally, maybe goes through that filter and comes out a little bit different. Maybe same content, just different presentation, okay? What I don't want you to walk away from here is, can't we all just get along, okay? Because there's no tools there. There's no meat on the bone. There's nothing to really change how you look at it. I often say in my classes, you have to have two things to walk away from these, two things I want people to walk away from these classes with. Number one, practical tools. Number two, the motivation to use them. Because if you walk out of here with no motivation to use them and a bunch of you know things on a piece of paper, you wasted an hour today and an hour tomorrow. So what I want you to walk away with is, how is this going to make my relationship with my spouse better, my kids better, my coworkers better? Because if you don't have that motivation, you won't start to increase your filter. You won't use these techniques. So hopefully you'll see that I'll add some of those things in. Feel free to add them in yourself whenever you've looked at, okay, yeah, I did do something different previously, and I got a different result. Because if you start to see that, I think then you have the motivation to actually utilize these techniques. So did you guys want to sit on the floor in the back, or did you? Okay, because we've got plenty of chairs if you'd like any. So. I just noticed you guys were back there. I just see these two heads. So as long as you're comfortable. What's that? Okay, good. So you lost the conflict management battle with the baby. They dictated things. I can understand that. I've done that plenty of times. So concession. A funny story. My daughters, we had, God blessed us richly, but we had daughters that were born very early. They were in the hospital for 5 months. Had digestive tract problems for the first year and a half, 2 years. Doctors kept on saying we have to put a G-tube in, and they're going to be 12 next week, and they're healthy, fit girls. By one who's just my spitfire, okay? I was feeding her one night at the late feeding at 11 p.m., and she took the nipple in her mouth. Nothing. Just stared at me. Just mad-dogged me for 10 minutes. She was all of 9 pounds at that point. And she just looked at me. And then after 10 minutes was up, whole thing was gone within 30 seconds. And I knew before that, but I definitely knew at that moment, oh God, give me patience. And this one's gonna just be a spitfire. She's gonna do something big. And you just need me, remind me, God, how much I wanted her, how much I prayed over her in the hospital every day for months, and you know, how much you blessed us with, this is the one, just to finish the story. The head of the NICU was gone when she got really bad. And he, months later, whenever we saw him at a reunion, said, I knew she wouldn't be there when we got back. I knew it. She was going to be gone. And God had a different idea. So, anyways, that's not usually part of my talk, but it's amazing. It's amazing. So, number two, interdependence. Okay? Interdependence is good and bad. It can create both cooperation and competition. So if we both need to work together to achieve something, that can create competition where we're working against each other, or it can create cooperation where we need to work together. Okay? There's a famous study, it's back in the 50s, I think, by a guy named Milgram, who's at Stanford. And he was trying to figure out a lot of things regarding race and how people interacted with different racial groups. And so he had two boys' summer camps, and they separated them apart, and they did all these things to get an us versus them mentality. And then they tried to have all these things to figure out how could we bring them back together. And they had group talks, and they had this, and they had that, and all these kind of things. None of them worked. What finally happened, and there's a total accident, the ice cream truck that would deliver ice cream once a week on the one road into the camps spun off into a ditch. They couldn't get the ice cream truck out of the ditch without all the boys working together. Okay? So a highly esteemed reward goal was the only thing that could bring them together, because without working together, they couldn't get it. So ice cream is the key to resolving all conflict management issues, evidently. So let's see. Perceived incompatible goals. Misperceptions can often be changed through clear communication. On the second page, we'll talk about things like intention stating, purpose stating. Okay, that's where you gotta get in the practice of stating what you're trying to achieve. Okay, not in a forceful, this is what we have to do, but here's my goal, here's what I'm trying to achieve, and then inviting the other person to say what they'd like to achieve, and then you can have a discussion about it. Okay, perceived scarce resources. Said what we're pointing out there is the amount of resources and perceived value are often relative. And what I'd point out is if we use war as an analogy, so many wars have been started over perceived scarce resources. Okay? How many of those wars do you think there were more resources after the war than there were at the beginning of the war? Zero. Okay? The war destroys the resources that they were worried about. Okay? Now, if we bring that back into our own relationships, with spouses, friends, children, same kind of thing. Obviously, it's not a raised earth kind of mentality, at least not most of the time, hopefully, within the family. But, you know, we if we're arguing over what we're going to do in the afternoon and we spend an hour arguing and now we're too late to go do what we want to do, kind of the same thing. So it doesn't, none of these in particular, no single aspect, tactic, approach is going to resolve every conflict. So let's be clear about that. A lot of it is about perspective, how you approach it, how you present it. But what I'm trying to do is give you a very broad smorgasbord of understanding conflict and then how you can deal with it, and then you can try to use these techniques that are more applicable to the individual situation you're in. Yeah?
Do you think conflict is inherently good?
No. The Chinese, I'm told, I don't read Chinese, but I've been told the Chinese symbol for conflict involves two characters. One is danger, one is opportunity. So there is inherently danger in conflict. I'm not going to be such a Pollyanna to say, oh yeah, it's wonderful, you can have a great dialogue. Yeah, sure, and that's of course how I approach everything with my wife. It's just wonderfully like that. But I do think it's important to realize that there's an opportunity. What's that opportunity? Clarification, better understanding, dialogue. I don't think it's all positive, but I don't think it's all negative either.
I'm thinking of the growth I've had in my life.
Mm-hmm.
Almost all of it has come from conflict.
Yeah, they don't grow a lot in nice, happy, fluffy times. I mean, they're nice, and we certainly like those nice, happy, fluffy times, whatever we've been through hell and back for weeks, months, a year. I mean, when I went through my situation with my daughters, yeah, I wasn't looking for a lot of challenging growth-oriented opportunities. I was looking to sleep and rejuvenate. But yes, whenever we're in conflict, whenever we have those difficult times, I don't know, does everybody else notice that? That's when we grow the most. That's when our faith increases. That's when we have new understandings of people and ourselves, those kind of things.
I would just add that just challenge, whether it's in the form of conflict or health or job loss, sometimes there's an outside force, sometimes an inside force, but if it's, God uses those things to grow us.
If we use a physiological model, if you don't stress muscles, they don't grow. They atrophy. If you just leave muscles alone, they're gone. I mean, if you don't use them. It's the same thing with our, mental state, our psychological state, our spiritual state. So that's a good point. Not just necessarily conflict, but any sort of challenge. So the last one, number five there, under the key components of conflict is interference. And the key point that I'd give there is parties often assume that others are willfully interfering, when many times they're not. They're just trying to achieve their goal, okay? Whether you're from LA or the Bay Area or just about anywhere else in California at this point, you have traffic, okay? When you can step back, you're probably not going to assume that all those hundreds of people that are locking up either the 405 or the 110 or the 680 are willfully trying to interfere with where you're getting to go. But that's what it can feel like a lot of times when you've got to get somewhere and you're running late and you're just like, and there's suddenly, there's certain expression, hand expressions and gestures and things that are not good conflict management. So we're going to move down to this next definition. We talked about this a little bit earlier. Conflict can be expressed or go unexpressed in many ways. And then you'll see there in bold, a critical factor is to consciously think about how you want to handle it rather than unconsciously creating unhealthy situations. So look at it and decide, what do I want to try to achieve here? How do I want to approach this? And then I give you three options. Avoidance, okay? Now, you could assume in a talk on conflict management that I'm going to say never avoid. That's not correct. There are some things that aren't worth that much, that aren't that big a deal, or maybe, quite honestly, sometimes the relationship isn't that important, okay, where it makes a lot of sense to avoid, to just not engage about it, okay? So avoidance, when used in the appropriate time, is a perfectly legitimate conflict management strategy, okay? Next one, what's that? Politics. There you go. That's a good one. It's become a little too hot over the last couple years, so a lot of us avoid it. We never had a formal rule before this last Christmas. Whenever my sister and brother-in-law from Dallas were coming out, my sister from Pasadena, who's extremely liberal, and my parents, who are extremely conservative, we all got together for Christmas. My mom called everybody ahead of time and said, my Christmas present, the thing I want, is no discussions about conflict. Because my brother-in-law is one of these that loves to kind of throw a bomb into the middle of a conversation and then walk away because it's fun to see, oh, look. Yeah, so she especially, and I then followed up on her request and called him directly and said, I know you think it's funny, Brian. Don't do it, okay? So I want to talk about the next one right there, intrapersonal resolution. I think this is really important, and it's not always just totally intuitive, so I want to explain it a little bit. This is where you simply make a conscious and explicit decision that you don't want to address this and that you're going to let it go. That second part is the really important part. So maybe this, let me give you an example. Maybe a coworker, let's not make it as close to home as a spouse. A coworker did something, they said something that really upset you. But you know what? It's really not in keeping with everything you know about them. They're generally a considerate, nice person. And you've got so much on your plate that day that it's just not worth your time to deal with it. The difference is you're really letting it go, not letting it build up. Now let's bring it back closer to home with our spouses, okay? I didn't give my background. I married, she's American technically, but her family's German. She grew up only speaking German in the household. She is German, okay? I'm the only one in her household that does not speak German, her mother, all them. So any of you that know Germans know kind of what that means, okay? We've got two type A's that came together, and then add on top of that, we didn't get married until I was 35 and she was 40. So fully developed adult personalities, type A's, get out of my way or I'll knock you down to get what I need to get done, okay? I've had to kind of look at this and go, okay, am I gonna let the resentment build up or am I gonna decide, you know what, this isn't worth it, it's not that big a deal, I'm gonna be strategic about the battles I fight. And of course, I'm talking about myself. I guess I should admit that she probably has to do this too. That is intrapersonal resolution. It's not resentment and letting things build up to where you explode over time. It's not what we call injustice collecting, where you kind of store this one away, okay? So that does intrapersonal resolution make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. Not easy to do a lot of times, but what I propose is it's your own individual decision whether you want to go with intrapersonal resolution or talk about it. And if you take ownership and feel like you've made the decision, a lot of times you're more comfortable letting things go than if you feel like it was forced upon you.
Is that okay? Kind of giving the person the benefit of the doubt and
I think that's part of it, and I'm trying to take it to a more concrete step of, I've decided this isn't that big a deal, it's out of character with how they usually are, it's not, whatever it is, and I'm letting it go. I'm done with it. So I think what you said is part of it, and I'm kind of bringing it to a more finite point. Yeah. Yeah.
So it's pretty much the same as the first one, you're just avoiding, you're not getting into it, right?
I'm trying to differentiate. Avoidance could still have residual, could still have some bitterness, that kind of thing. I'm trying to say you're done with this one. So yeah, there could be some crossover, but I do look at a maybe semantics, but I think a significant semantics difference there. Avoidance, there may be some residue, there may be something that's some built up resentment, but intrapersonal resolution is, nope, I'm done with that. And it takes practice. I mean, like I say, I do this for a living, and I've still had to look at, you know, okay, how do I do this? So I want to get you, and then we'll, could you add your hand?
For the person that struggles deeply with injustice collecting but has mm-hmm. logical understanding that this interpersonal resolution is absolutely the best way to go on 90% of conflict, like what are some tools to, you know, strengthen that muscle of, you know, because logically, this person, you know, knows this is not worth it. Their character, you know, they're,
yeah.
You know, so what are, if you have any.
Very good question. I don't have tons because I think it's so individual to that person.
Yeah.
It might be.
Or she needs counseling, that person.
Well, no. It's how concrete do you want it to be? Do you need to write it down on a piece of paper, scratch it out, and then throw it away and make it that much more concrete? Do you need to write it down and keep a list, and then actually when you get to the one that's big, circle that and address it with your spouse or coworker or whoever else? I don't want this to be just, you know, like I said, can't we all get along and grin and bear it? What people in recovery call white-knuckling it, okay? White-knuckling, for people that don't know that term, people that are in drug and alcohol recovery, especially people that are big on 12 steps, they talk about white-knuckling it, which is not really working the program, not getting in touch with your higher power, not developing as a person, but just, okay, I'm not going to take a drink today. So that's very different than developing yourself spiritually and getting past your need to drink or your need to take drugs. So whatever it is that person can do to build that muscle of, okay, this isn't, a lot of it may be just strategic. This isn't the hill I want to die on. This isn't the battle that I want to go on. But I am, when there is a battle that's really important to me, I'm going to actually discuss it with that person.
There's a verse that esteems letting something go.
Yeah, I think there's quite a few of them. Yeah, there are. Thank you.
There's a specific one that says, blessed is the friend who doesn't keep every offense.
Oh, very good. I like it.
It was just a comment.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that's a big one. I also look at, too, like I said, mentioned a couple of things, it's not in keeping with what I know about them. It's not in keeping with their character. And the other one, I'll add to that, which we're going to talk about a little bit, check your own interpretation of what they just did, okay? Because you've got a couple different things, and I'm trying to think if I have it. No, I don't have it on this outline. you've got three aspects here. You've got what was said, you've got how it's interpreted, and then you've got the interaction between the two, okay? And that's a lot of room for subjectivity and misinterpretation, okay? So that could be trying to attribute the best intentions to what they had to say. Yeah. Was there another? Yeah.
I was just wondering, the avoidance part of it would be for you to go aside until your emotions calm down and then come back and address it, and then interpersonal resolution, just to say, it's not worth wasting time.
That's a good part. Yeah, I think with your avoidance, you're mixing two steps there. You're avoiding in the short term, which is smart because your prefrontal cortex is flooded, okay? Our executive decision making is in our prefrontal cortex. Cortisol floods that whenever we get really amped up. And basically then your executive decision making, your objective brain is offline. And your amygdala, your highly emotional brain is highly activated. So you kind of did a two-part. There's avoidance and then coming back to it later whenever you're maybe a little bit more balanced and rational. Yeah. Okay? Yeah.
I don't want to ask right now if you have something that'll be relevant to it, but I've got a specific question about a Spitfire daughter.
Okay. Let's save that for a little bit later. It might even be tomorrow because that's when we're going to get to a lot of very practical applications. But please bring it up again because probably
Spitfire daughter.
Spitfire daughter. Yeah, I was going to say, it probably applies to quite a few of us, okay? And believe me, I don't have a silver bullet for that, okay? But let's see, we could, we can take the entire first page and the entire second page and apply it to that situation and probably just be scratching the surface, okay?
Yes.
Oof. So let's see. Conflict is often a balancing act between personal goals and relationships. Personal goals and relationships. And it's just important to be aware of that when you respond. Like I said, I've been very blessed. I've taught this in a lot of different cultures. And, when you're teaching in Thailand to a culture that's built on deference, a lot of that deference for age or position, that kind of thing, or in Africa, where it's all about relationships, you see that this scale really kind of balances out different ways. Whenever I teach, when I talk to Africans, I mean, it's personal goals, what are those? It's relationships, it's the group, it's the community, it's the tribe, okay? In the US, where would you say it's?
Personal goals,
okay? So my advice in each one of those situations is to balance it out a little bit more. I think we need to balance it out a little bit more with being a little bit more focused on relationships, on long-term connections, those kind of things. I would say sometimes, some Africans, that kind of thing, maybe they need to be able to set proper boundaries a little bit more and be a little bit more concerned about their personal goals, not just the relationship. So I think it's trying to keep a balance between those two. Okay, moving on to what causes it. So this is what I like to call your map. Motivation, assumptions, and perceptions. So I'm hoping that this creates a map for you to be able to analyze individual conflicts. And again, it does take a little time to kind of get used to this, but you look at what are the motivations, what are the assumptions, what are the perceptions. So let's break each one of these down. Motivations. What's possibly driving the other person or their behavior? What are they trying to achieve? Okay? What you'll do is if you take this from the unconscious into the conscious, you'll find that you're making probably a lot of negative assumptions regarding their motivation. And maybe just challenge that a little bit and see, is it really in keeping with their behavior and what I know about them? Am I just assuming that they're trying to get in my way to cause problems, or are they trying to achieve something different than what I'm trying to achieve? And that can really dictate how you respond back to them, okay? Next one, the fill in the blank, what fears, what I call the FUD factor, fears, uncertainties, or doubts? Fears, uncertainties, or doubts could they be experiencing? And how could this affect their behavior towards you? And then the next thing that's on there, the next thing that's not on there is, what can you do about that? Okay? What can you clarify about what you're trying to achieve, about what you just said, about your behavior, what you just did, that you can clarify for them so that they're not responding based on fears, uncertainties, and doubts, okay? Now, I didn't come up with this FUD factor. It was actually taught to me whenever I was a young account executive with AT&T, okay? So this is back 25 years ago. And AT&T, many of you won't even remember this, but, you know, we were the behemoth. We were the, you know, there were these crazy startups, Sprint and MCI. And what we were taught is instill fear, uncertainty, and doubt in your clients, because otherwise they'll go with these startups. We're the safe bet, okay? So you need to, you know, make them scared of all these other competitors so they'll stick with us, okay? Not really the most positive message to get out there, but I think if large multinational corporations realize the power of this, there's something to it, okay? We do respond a lot from fear, uncertainty, and doubt, and so it's really important. I use it in my work all the time with people that are getting divorced. They're assuming the worst. I mean, the level of trust is underneath this carpet at this, you know, whenever I'm working with them, and so I need to bring those things out. Okay, so what you're really concerned about is that you're not going to be able to spend any time with your children anymore. And what you're really concerned about is you're going to be out on the street because you won't have enough money and you got to go back to work and all those kind of things. And a lot of times you'd think, well, Barry, why the heck are you bringing up things that are that significant and that potentially scary? They're already there. They're there in their mind. And if I bring them out, then we can start to address them and talk about them. If they're just these unresolved anxieties floating around in their head and they're unconscious, 10 times more powerful, 100 times more powerful than if you just bring them out into the open. So a lot of times, if you can think about what are they concerned about, what are they scared about, and this, we will probably touch on this a little bit when we talk about that Spitfire daughter. What, you know, think about being, mine are going to be 12 next week, okay? Being, I would not want to be 12 or 14 or 16 in 2019, the Bay Area, Southern California, even in maybe less crazy places. I know you guys are in the Central Coast. I envision that as less crazy than Los Angeles or the San Francisco Bay Area. I'm probably just, you know, being too delusional with that. But, I mean, how many of you guys would want to be growing up now versus when we grew up? It is a scary time. There is so much going on. I mean, I live in the South Bay in Los Angeles, one of the most affluent areas around. Those kids have everything they want except for parents' security, parents' attention and focus, okay? Living in a stable environment rather than, okay, what, you know, everything changes in 3-minute cycles, okay? You can't have a YouTube video over 3 minutes because you'll lose people's attention, okay? It's crazy. So to me, one of the answers is, how do we provide as much stability as possible? Not how do we get that Spitfire daughter in line, that is the other half of it, but how do we provide as much stability as possible so they just don't feel totally destabilized in a very destabilizing world? So,
on the
yeah.
motivation section, it seems that I could have no idea why this person's acting this way, or I could make
Yep. So, I'm going to do this generically. I often ask my questions whether my clients want to be me to be diplomatic or direct in my responses. What I'm trying to do is get buy-in and feedback as to how they want me to be. Which would you prefer? Diplomatic or direct?
Direct.
Okay. I'm going to push back on that first one. I think many of us in this room, maybe not everybody, but many of us in this room, have enough intuitive sense based on our 30, 40, 50 years worth of life experience to have a decent idea what that person might be experiencing. Not in every situation, but in 75, 80% of those situations. That also leads me to step number two, checking in. You know, you really are coming at me about this. You really seem upset. I didn't mean to upset you. Can you help me understand what's going on for you right now? Okay? So checking in with them. I've had that when people screaming at me, and I do it sometimes very assertive. Boy, you are being, and maybe I'm not supposed to say this at Mount Hermon, but you are being a real jackass, okay? And that's not in keeping with what I know about you. Can you help me understand if I did something to produce that response in you? So I'm not saying this all has to be nice and fluffy, okay? Sometimes I'm too animated when somebody just got in my face to come back in quite the way that would probably be the most productive. But I'm also, I hope what I just said, yeah, it started out a little harsh, but I invited them to tell me what part I played in that. Does that make sense? So checking in. So what's that?
Own up a little bit. I mean,
yeah.
When you show your even a small sense of humility, it really de-escalates.
Yeah, I think it does. Yeah.
I'm thinking of family within my home, I mean, conflict within my home. And if I said, you seem very upset about this, that would be like, I'm not upset about this.
Okay, so we're talking about teenagers? Oh, okay. See, I made an incorrect assumption there. I made an assumption.
I would say probably all my children, my husband, maybe me even included, like, as you know, you're really upset about that.
Okay.
Sort of like, no, I'm not. Like, sort of this.
So maybe we generalize it.
So my curiosity is how do you approach that? And I think humility is key, but how do you?
I think you just said it. Curiosity. What's going on for you? Because what we're doing a little bit with you're really upset and why they're probably reacting, we're labeling it. So that can be taken a couple different ways. Plenty of people can say, yeah, I am upset. But then other people, they might feel like that's too much of a label. So it's just, what's going on for you? What's happening here? Why are you reacting so strongly to what I said? Again. Okay. So give me a little bit more, because I don't want to be too generic.
Yeah.
What age range are we talking about when you say they don't know?
Easily, like teenagers, right?
Okay.
Grumpy and
yeah.
What's going on with you?
Yeah. Some of this is just, I'm trying to figure out how to, we can approach this from so many different perspectives. I think some of it's just sacrificial parenting. You're not always going to get a real good response. You got to hang on for that 4, 5, 6 years or whatever to just know if you're consistently there and you take that abuse of them being crabby whenever you really want to talk with them, that they're going to come out of that tunnel at the other end feeling mom and dad cared for them. And I don't know that that's necessarily conflict management. That's just, I would call it sacrificial parenting. So I think there's different strategies. So, and if they really don't know, just ask as many open-ended questions as you can. And then maybe some not so open-ended questions. What's going on at school? You know, hey, what's going on with your friends? You know, if you know what's going on with them, hey, are you still having that problem with, you know, so-and-so or that kind of thing? So you can ask some general open-ended ones and then a little more specific ones.
And you're saying, like, pick your battles.
Yeah, some of those pick your battles. Yeah. And I should have said, just one second, another admission so that I'm not, because I always like to be really straightforward when I'm doing workshops. I have a certain style of parenting that is not the typical style. I'm old school, I guess maybe that's what they call. I'm strict. When my daughters started saying no a lot when they were 2 years old, I sat them down and said, no isn't a word you use with your parents, okay? You don't say no. You can say, I'd rather do this, I have another idea or something like that. They don't say no. So, and I've now got 2 preteens, so you can go, yeah, right, Barry, get ready for the next couple years. I think if kids feel that love and support, that unconditional love and support, and you lay proper boundaries, many times they'll respect it. Not necessarily abide by it, but they'll respect it. And that's much more of the long game. That's not, you know, what you said at a particular date. So, anyways, we got off on a little bit of a tangent there, but... it's helpful. I think we're all struggling with how we best interact with our teens, preteens, kids. What did you want to say?
We have a situation that's uniquely difficult. We have adopted kids. Mm. She's got deep grief issues over her birth parents, and we adopted her from birth.
Yeah.
So that kind of wraps everything in a package that brings out our compassion and sometimes our confusion because we don't truly understand what she's feeling.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, I think she potentially has DSM narcissism. She's so in love with herself that it almost feels sociopathic, her inability to feel for other people and care. Mm. And when I ask her to do something, there's almost no effort put out. It's like I'm her servant, and it's not just it's a bummer. It's profound how little she will do, and she's almost 11. And I'll ask her, why aren't you willing to do anything around here, and she just stands there looking at me. And it's just, I can't live her life in real time with my life, but I can't just send her into her room to do anything. It won't happen, and I've had to put some other
Let's be clear. this is not going to resolve that.
Right.
I want to own up to that. Okay, these are very powerful techniques that can be used over time. My middle sister was adopted at birth, okay? So I have some very strong connection with this. Counseling. She needs to be in ongoing counseling because...
One specific question. In the short term, if she's just going off and she literally will not shut the mouth, do I walk away if I can? Or do I... Is there something I can say that will kind of shut it down if I can't leave the burning chicken? And she won't stop talking. There gets this... Like, she won't leave and I can't leave and she won't stop talking, but she's talking off, you know, like...
I need to kind of shut something
down.
I'm going to give you a technique that my wife and I use, and you're going to have to morph it or tweak it a little bit, that my parents from another generation really were curious about when we did it. Every time we punished our girls, we would either start or end with, I love you no matter what, and blah, blah, blah. And so, and I mean, like I said, we're harsh. We're very, very demanding parents. And I didn't notice until my parents commented and they go, wow, you're laying down the law and being really strict and really, and then you're also at the same time saying you love them. Don't you think that gives them a mixed message? And to me, it doesn't give them a mixed message. It gives them the message they need. So if you need to walk out of the room, I would say, you know, I love you and I care about you no matter what. And I can't deal with this right now because I had a really long day. Or because I just can't deal with this right now. So I think it's balancing those two out because her main thing is abandonment. That's where the narcissism comes. I'm not a licensed therapist. My first master's is in clinical psychology. That narcissism is only on the surface. It's masking just being scared as you know what of being abandoned. I'm 90% sure. She needs to see a good therapist that works with preteen and teen girls. So, ideally, yes. And I say ideally, because I think it's just important in that situation for that therapist to really know adoption issues. So, anyways, well, let's talk more about that one-on-one. Yeah.
I have something that's totally
okay. I think you've already mentioned the most powerful one. If you own up to it and say that, exactly, it's extremely hard. So I think just there's certain things I can't say at Mount Hermon that are very direct. Owning your stuff. Let's go with that. Owning your stuff. Okay. Owning that and being able to express that to the other person, I think that it humanizes it, it de-escalates it. It's going to be harder for him to come back in a really strong, forceful way when you've owned that I'm trying to deal with it. So we can go beyond that, but to me, that right there is such a powerful step. Then I'm going to jump to the second page for just a second here, okay? Let's see, where is it? Okay, where it says, about halfway down the page, it says, perception internal, the second bullet point, identify your own hot buttons and be aware of when they're triggered, okay? Do what I call a cognitive override. Know your own stuff and know this is what triggers me. Wait a second, did what he just said, was it really that bad? Or did he just touch on a nerve, okay? Whenever I taught this in Thailand, I had a group of like 20 or 25 people and only 5 of them spoke English. So when I got to hot buttons, they all started kind of talking in the corner and trying to figure out what the direct translation was. And I think the direct translation is so much more powerful. Their direct translation was old scars. So if you think about a scar that's been ripped open a bunch of times, you barely touch that thing and you're through the roof. And it has nothing to do with that particular interaction. or very little. That particular interaction, what that person said or did, was 10 to 20% of the equation, and the rest of it was all the baggage from before. So think about, identify your old scars, identify what triggers you, and then be able to do a cognitive override of, wait a second, that's one of my three big ones or my five big ones or whatever that really just send me through the roof. I need to kind of think about, you know what, did that person, what, did what they say, was it really that bad? That kind of thing, and then take charge of that yourself. Does that address what you're talking about? Okay. I don't have any research on that whatsoever. I don't. That would be very interesting research. A lot. A lot. But I think you'd also have to categorize them, kind of minor triggers, major triggers, triggers that are just annoying. Because this is how we did it in my family of origin, so that's the way it's supposed to be done, and this idiot comes along and does it somewhere different, and I mean, how you roll up the toothpaste, okay, you know?
My first spouse just doesn't really have any triggers at all. I mean, I'll be balanced.
I don't believe that that person doesn't have triggers. I just don't. I think they're either repressing or they're just, I mean, there are personalities that are a little bit more let it roll off your back, but, you know, I think that's a better situation. I mean, let's see, two spouses with tons of triggers versus one spouse with tons of triggers and one with less, I'd rather have that second situation. And then just be able to talk to that person and kind of negotiate it. You know, I mean, I'm even getting to the level, if we're talking spouses, okay, what would you really like? What can I give you whenever I fly off the handle for something totally ridiculous and an hour later I realize that? Is it a back rub? Is it your favorite dinner? Is it, I know this may sound, you know, pedestrian, or you shouldn't be negotiating with your spouse. I think we negotiate with our spouse all the time. I mean, either consciously or unconsciously. So I don't know, that could be a technique to help balance things out.
I mean, I'm sure my friend's husband will not know our sexual favors
often. No, that's okay. Because that's one of the things I was thinking when we talked about dinner. I made it a little bit more, I don't want to even want to say Christian, because I think God wants us to have a healthy sex life with our spouse. So, yeah, he made it. Okay, let's see. We've got about 10 more minutes. I'm going to try to get you through the rest of the first page. Okay, assumptions. What characteristics, values, goals, expectations, etc., are you attributing to them? Again, be careful of what you're attributing to them, okay? Really bring it into your conscious mind. And what are your own assumptions, okay? Okay, go down to perceptions. What are you perceiving about the situation? Not assuming, but actually perceiving, okay? So we'll talk about it a little bit more tomorrow, but it's what I call the CSI approach, okay? If you guys think about that show CSI, they're always trying to throw you off, right? They're you know, they lead you one direction, and in the last 10, 15 minutes, they totally take a different direction because you didn't follow the science. You didn't follow the facts, okay? So that's the difference here that I get. What are you perceiving versus what are you assuming, okay? You what are you actually seeing? What are you hearing? How can you increase that filter and have a more critical listen to what they're actually saying? And are they really saying something horrible, or are they actually just asking for what they need? Okay. What do you think their perceptions are all about regarding you or the situation? And are there potential misconceptions on their part you might be able to clarify? I think we talked about that a bit. Okay. So you see there in bold, misperceptions of the other person's behavior or motivations are the primary reason for most conflicts. Often we take a position or get defensive too early and don't explore all the options. Okay? So it's a lot of questioning, a lot of curiosity, a lot of, you know, I'd really, you know, sometimes, and again, my wife and I, we're just weird, we're very direct, but I have no idea where you're coming from on this. I got nothing. Okay? You got to help me out here. How did you get to this proposal or this idea or whatever else? Now, with her, I can do that. But that's a lot better than, what in the, you know, it just, it's all, we're talking different levels. It's not good and bad. It's 10 levels and degrees. And can I get it three levels back to more constructive, more positive? Yeah.
We've been married almost 25 years. And that in itself can be, I know what you're thinking, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And in my large family, the husbands are generally a certain way. And in his family, the husbands are generally a very different way. And sometimes just the way I'm being treated triggers me. And I want him to hear me say, I don't really care what you meant. It hurts my feelings. Please stop doing that. It's
okay.
Been 25 years. I'm never going to like it. I'm not going to get over it. And the fact that it hurts my feelings should be what matters, not what you meant.
Okay.
And there's a gap.
Why does it hurt your feelings? And I'm not even asking you to answer that. I'm asking you to tell him that. Because what you did was, what you were doing right there was more argumentative, and that I don't really care why. Excuse me, I'm starting to choke. You should care because it bothers me. I agree with that. But that's not going to get the response you want from him. So if you tell him why it bothers you so much, I think that's going to engender more empathy. Does that make sense? Okay, well. Then maybe it's once again. I'm not saying these are all perfect, but.
I want an answer from you as far as what would be.
You want me to mediate this? No, I'm going
to
stay away from that.
Situation from your side of the desk.
Yeah, that's why I just referenced a few minutes ago family of origin. Family of origin is huge. Okay, so some of that we're just going to have to put up with in families. I'm never going to change certain aspects of my wife. Okay, I'm never going to do it. Okay, I've got just a little bit of a strange analogy, but we have a dog called a Bouvier. It's a herding dog. Okay, and my first Bouvier was smart as a whip. So he'd be in the dog park when he's young. He's 100 pounds, 110 pounds, and he'd go along. He'd nip other dogs, okay? Because that's what they do to the cattle, okay? I trained the nipping out of him. I could never train the kind of giving him a shoulder. So I tried to train what was most offensive to the other people in the dog park out of him, with the understanding that hundreds of years of breeding, I was not going to be able to train out of him that he's going to run alongside dogs like he would around long cattle and sheep, okay? I'm not comparing my dog to my wife, although she wouldn't mind that. We love the dog, so that'd be a positive. Actually, I am. They're both very strong-willed, very stubborn, and I knew I was going to be able to change certain things, and I wasn't going to be able to change others. So I don't know that that's the answer that you want, but it gets along with picking your battles and being strategic. I think that, and maybe you rank order what's really important to you, what's really important to him, and he's going to give more on your top three, and you're going to give more on his top three. So, yeah, sometimes meeting in the middle, but I'm not saying that that's the only way. If it's really important to one of you, then I do think the other person should give a little more on that, okay? And I was not just, that was reciprocal. Yeah. That was between the two, okay. Oh, yeah. Ah. Okay. Is there only three? Okay, I thought there was more. Okay, so if we go down to perception, focus on the facts. We just talked about this one. Focus on the facts, not interpretations, assumptions, or judgments. Focus on the facts, not interpretations, assumptions, or judgment. And you could put the CSI approach by that. That's what I just talked about with that CSI approach, okay? Focus on the facts, not interpretations, assumptions, or judgments. Okay? Oh, I'm sorry. Go to the balcony. But that's not going to make much sense without the explanation. So, go to the balcony. Well, that's a different approach, but that one would be a good one too. Under action, look for low cost, high value options. Number one example of that, an apology. Okay. The first bullet point there under interaction is not going to make sense again until we talk about it, but I'll give it to you anyways. Separate the person from the problem. Separate the person from the problem. Okay? Okay, now that I let the cat out of the bag for tomorrow. Okay, so let's just wrap up. We've got 5 minutes here. Let's see. Let's just go down to the bottom. This is something I came up with. I call it your plan, okay? Number one, check your perceptions. Are they objective and valid, or are they based, reactive and biased, okay? Bias is not necessarily a bad thing. If you know, all of us living in 2019, we make snap decisions. We make dozens, probably hundreds of snap decisions every day, okay? We have to do it. When we're driving, you know, we'd be in accidents if we didn't do it. What I would encourage you to do is not let those biases or not let those kind of things be unconscious. Bring them into your conscious so you realize the decisions you're making, okay? Number two, let go of previous issues or judgments. Easier said than done. So what I get to there is the second part. Don't let these overly impact your current situation. I'm on the bottom of the first page where it says plan down at the bottom, okay? So a lot of what we talked about, really being able to stop and say, okay, you know, what is this person really saying? Is it as bad as it came across first to me? The way I'm interpreting it, the only way to interpret their actions or their behaviors, or are there multiple explanations as to what could be going on? You know, in conflict management trainings, they often have this example of, you know, this guy gets on the subway with his 5 kids. He just sits down, head in his hands. The kids are running over, screaming, disrupting the entire cabin. And everybody's like, "What? Why doesn't this guy take control of his kids?" This goes on for half an hour. And finally, somebody goes over and says something to him. And he pulls his head up. He said, "I'm sorry, man. We just left the hospital. Their mother just passed away. And I don't know what to do with them." Totally changes your perspective on what's going on. So usually life isn't quite that extreme, but I would look at, is my interpretation of what's going on and why they did what they did the only one, or are there other alternatives? It's kind of what Eugene talked about this morning about humanizing people in the situation. Okay. Analyze. Ask yourself what course of action would best meet your needs in the long run. One of the examples I use of this, I teach an interview class down in Skid Row, mostly homeless population in Los Angeles. And a lot of those guys, now 3 strikes is gone, but a lot of them, they had 2 strikes, okay? And, you know, in their culture and when they grew up and being in prison and everything, somebody gets in your face, you get in their face right back, and I'd have to talk to them about, do you really want to go in for a minimum 25-year sentence for, you know, a simple battery conviction because it's your 3rd strike. So thinking about what's right for you and your family in the long run, thinking more long-term rather than short-term. Now, luckily, I don't think most of us have those kind of things hanging over our head, but analyze what's going on in that situation and figure out what will make sense for you in the long run versus reacting based on pride, emotion, those kind of things, okay? And then negotiate. I'm going to add openly right there in front of discuss. Openly discuss a course of action with the other party. Be flexible, direct, and open. This doesn't always mean bending over backwards. I'm not endorsing Eugene's approach of his wife is always right, okay? Be direct, set proper boundaries, and also be flexible, okay? My wife would want me to endorse Eugene's approach, but talk with them, be direct, open, and honest, and talk about what could work. How could we come up with a new solution? We were down at the boardwalk yesterday, and there was a gentleman there he was a grandfather. There was, you know, grown-up children, and then there were their children. And so there's like 8 of them, and they were trying to figure out which ride they were going on next. And they were, I said, you know, I'm a mediator. Can I help? And they, you know, they laughed and everything. But he came up to me after this today. He's like, yeah, actually, we could have used you. We were trying to figure out which ride we were going on next. When there's dozens of these kind of decisions and interactions that we have every day. I work at home a lot. I'm with my wife probably more than just about anybody else, you know, that has a full-time job. That's nice sometimes. Other times, it takes a lot of work.
So what would you do in that situation?
In that situation? First thing I'd say is everybody needs to be heard, okay? So if you want, resolving conflict takes some time. So I think the first thing is everybody wants to be heard. And then you look at how important is the decision. If the decision isn't that important, if it's just what's the next ride, then maybe you just do something easy like take a vote. If it's a really important decision, then you will sit around and talk more about everybody's perspective and that kind of thing. The first thing is to seem heard, okay? I can't remember his name right now, but there's a U.S. senator that spent 3 years in Ireland, and now, you know, we hardly talk about Ireland, okay? But, you know, for 15, 20 years, that was one of the biggest conflicts on the face of the earth. He was in charge of negotiating the end to all that. I wish I could remember his name. But he spent 3 years in Ireland listening to anybody that wanted to talk to him. Anybody. And, I mean, I don't mean to stereotype, but the Irish could talk, okay? So, you know, there were hundreds of people. And what that did is when he got to the negotiating table, everybody felt heard by the person that was in charge of the whole thing, the most important person. And so that built credibility with him. And I think even with kids, you know, like I said, I'm a pretty strict parent, but one of the things I try to do is always let them express themselves. And I may just say, well, I understand that, and we're going to do this other thing because it's a safety issue or because of whatever else. But I think the first step is feeling heard, then analyzing how significant the decision is, and then allotting a time accordingly. So, but no, I was with my family, so I just said, I mostly did it as a joke, and then I walked on and dealt with the conflicts within my family rather than somebody else's that day. So. Yeah.
Short on time.
Yeah. And I've said, I don't care what you mean, dozens of times.
Yeah.
And when I'm at my best, I say, I get it. I get that you want to do something different. This is what we need to do right now. And I think that's a world of difference there. Yeah, exactly. So it's when we're at our best self, like Ryan talked about, when we're angry, hungry, tired, feeling alone, he said it, are most vulnerable, I think that's when we get into most conflicts. So that's why I emphasize, it's not just conflict management techniques, it's the motivation to use them. If you see things changing with your spouse when you do things a little differently, if you see things changing with your kids when you do things a little differently, that's going to motivate you to keep doing this. Because without the motivation, none of this works. Let's take one final question. There we go, Mitchell, yep, yeah. It was George Mitchell. So, and he's, like I said, it was like 2.5, 3 years, all he did was listen to people. So I think that's tremendously powerful, whether it's a Spitfire daughter or somebody else. And you know what? You are probably not going to get a glimmer of recognition of how important that was that you listened to her. But 5 years, 6 years, 10 years from now, it's important. It's hugely important. So it's not a quick fix, especially not in those kind of situations. Two last questions and we'll get out of here. Mm-hmm.
So how do you, because I found that with those styles, you tend to like stalemate and nothing ever changes.
Yeah, yeah.
So.
That would be a complicated response. It's more of an overall strategy rather than one particular thing. One thing, honestly, I would say, I'll give you an extra copy of this conflict management inventory that's on the back here. Have them take it. Mm-hmm. If you have that opportunity, I'm not sure what kind of, if we're talking about coworkers versus kids or, have them take it, and then the next question, which we'll talk a little bit about tomorrow, is why is that your style? How has that worked for you? And I think it's a lot of exploration, because I'm betting that both of those people have found that that style hasn't worked for them many times, and if you just tell them, well, you really shouldn't be so competing, or you really shouldn't avoid so much, you know that's going to bounce off them. If they come to an understanding of, okay, this is a strategy, it served me well in some times, and other times it's just totally fallen flat, they might be more interested to start going with different strategies. Yeah, and we'll talk about those five strategies a little bit more tomorrow. One last question.
We're trying to get rid of complaints in our house.
Okay. God bless you. I hope.
When my kids come to me trying to share their heart, but I do want to hear them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I refuse to listen to complain in order for them to try to find something positive to say.
Yeah.
How can I balance that? I don't want to shut them down. down because they're so complaining. At the same time, I want to be a parent that is there to listen to their sad day or hard time,
yeah.
You know?
That is hard because you don't want to shut them down. I start to go with the strategy that one of my managers taught me when I was early in my career, and that is every time you present a problem, I want you to have a potential solution. So that's one way. Now, will that shut them down? I don't know. But I think what you're trying to do is engender problem solving on them before they bring it to you, and then you can talk about it. So that's one thing I'd put out there is if you're going to complain about something and there's a problem, come with one solution, and then we'll talk about that, and maybe then I'll help you come up with other solutions, or I'll have some other solutions. So that's one thing I'd say. The other thing is just empathy. I try to do that too. I've got one that, actually I've got two from time to time, they switch off. I've got twins, and one's more negative, the other one's more negative. Just trying to stay positive with them, trying to model positivity. And I don't mean superficial, you know, but just a constructive spirit, okay? And I think you balance it out. You balance empathy with positivity. You know, when your friends treat you like that, I know that hurts, and I know that that really stinks for you. And I've thought of, you know, maybe these two ways you could address that or something, or do you have a way to address it? So, again, no silver bullets, but I would say ask them to present a proposal as to how to deal with it, and then empathy with them, and then try to go on to problem solving. You're welcome.
Sometimes I encourage my kids to come up with a verse where God would be sufficient in that situation. Because he says to
that's a great idea.
Stop grumbling and complaining.
Yeah.
Everything.
Yeah, I know. I tried to get him to memorize that verse. That didn't work. So we're going to be going through a lot more of the second page tomorrow. So a lot of specific techniques to use both internally, externally with others, that kind of thing, and with interaction. And then what we're more than likely going to start with is we're going to spend a few minutes where everybody gets to do this one, and then we'll talk a little bit about what that means. Yep. Yep. Okay. So I will see you guys then. Thanks for all the questions and interaction.